radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
It feels like a part of a trade because these guys have been out for so much of the season that it feels like we're acquiring two new players. And that's an impactful thing to this club and what they mean to this club.
That is Astros general manager Dana Brown on Tuesday essentially saying that getting Jose Altuve back, getting Yordan Alvarez back, is just like a trade. I thought to myself, since yesterday was yet another Thursday where the Houston Astros did not have a baseball game, that we could talk about what to expect by Tuesday's trade deadline, 5 o'clock Central Time, with a new general manager running the show for the Houston Astros. If you've been listening to me long enough, and I know a lot of you generally are like, Paul, please stop talking baseball. No, I refuse to. I need to pander. But I have said that the way that the Astros should handle the trade deadline is probably stand pat. Because this is one of those years where you have the pieces to make this work. There's just a lot of players that are underperforming. And you're hoping that they're going to do better. That's Jose Abreu. That's Jeremy Peña. That's Alex Bregman. There's a couple of players in the lineup. There's some pitchers. Framber Valdez hasn't been pitching well of late. Christian Javier hasn't been as dominant as he was last year. Hunter Brown has not been that consistent, but this is essentially his rookie season. The bullpen has had its issues as well, but they are capable of more than what you have seen from them to open up the season. So I can say that, but I'm very curious as to if Dana Brown can say that. He's in his first year on the job, and I really wonder if maybe there is pressure on him to make something happen over the course of this weekend, and if maybe he's got to stay in and make some phone calls all weekend long because of pressure from Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell. You saw what those two did in the months leading up to the year. You saw the contract that they gave to Rafael Montero, Jesus. You saw the contract that they gave to Jose Abreu, Jesus. You saw the contract that they gave to Michael Brantley. Not great moves. Dana Brown, on Tuesday, at the very same press conference, did say that he has autonomy from Jim Crane at this deadline. But I really do wonder about it. Here is the general manager of the Houston Astros.
Deadline. Yeah, there's no marching orders. I mean, the only involvement he's had is what I've kept him in the loop on. You know, I mean, he's allowing me to run the team, and he's given me, you know, the steering wheel and said, hey, this is your job. You get it done. You know, just keep me posted as to what's going on, and I've kept him posted, and we've had conversations. Even today, we've had some talks. So, but he's pretty much given me the steering wheel and said, hey, this is your gig, so get it done.
I have a hard time believing that Jim Crane is just being laissez-faire on this front. Mainly just based off of everything that we heard reported about his relationship with the Astros' previous general manager, James Click. I have a hard time buying into the idea that there's zero pressure from Crane and that he just wants Brown to do his job. And I know that one of the things that Jim Crane liked about Jeff Luhnow is that Luhnow basically told him to bleep off from time to time, actually showed some gusto, some chutzpah, some balls when he was talking with him. But is Dana Brown going to do that? And again, it's the first year on the job. I don't know if there's really that much pressure on Dana Brown with that in mind to make something happen. And I do think that the smart thing for the Astros to do at the trade deadline is to tread lightly when it comes to any potential deals, not giving up big name prospects like a Drew Gilbert or anything like that for a short-term rental, unless it's Shohei Ohtani. If it's Shohei Ohtani, then F that. I mean, see you, Drew Gilbert. I will totally forget your name. 100%. Even if he ends up being good on another team, I will totally forget about you if it results in a trade that gets Shohei Ohtani for the second half of this year. I will take a Shohei Ohtani rental. I will let Shohei Ohtani use me the way that Randy Johnson used this team back in the day. It was fun, right? I mean, it didn't lead into anything, but what the hell? Like, you had Randy Johnson for a hot moment in time, Sean Mapes.
I was a little worried when you started the sentence, I'll let Shohei Ohtani use me, dot, dot, dot. I was like, uh-oh, where is this going? But like Randy Johnson.
To a championship.
Used the team.
That's where it's going, Sean.
Well, Randy Johnson famously did not win a championship.
But it's not his fault. I mean, he played lights out.
No, definitely not his fault. It's at least his fault in 98 or 99, whatever year it was.
Who is it the fault of? Jeff Bagwell? Craig Biggio? 713-780-3776. Did the Astros two Hall of Famers let the team down back in 1997 and 1998 the same way that Jeff Bagwell let down the team this offseason during free agency? Thoughts? Look, I'm curious. I'm very curious as to what Dana Brown's going to do. When we've heard him speak, he has generally spoken like a politician. We've compared him to Howard Dean because he was portrayed as being transparent right out of the chute and saying, yeah, we're going to get deals for Jose Altuve and deals for Alex Bregman. Haven't seen those deals happen yet. We heard him say that when things went to arbitration with Kyle Tucker, that there are no hard feelings. Sure. We have heard him say that we will be aggressive, but we're not interested in parting with top prospects in exchange for rental players in the past, but maybe Dana Brown is not feeling the same way on that front, because if you listen to him, he said that since there's more buyers than sellers, he's still optimistic and they're weighing the idea of potentially trading prospects for rentals.
Because there's so many buyers, and there's few sellers. So, we just don't know right now. But we are, we are active.
Are you optimistic about?
Yeah, very optimistic. Very optimistic. I mean, it could potentially cost you prospects, and that's one of the things that we have to, monitor closely. You know, do you want to mortgage, the future for a rental? So that's something that we have to look at it as an organization and front office. Is it worth it?
I think an interesting point was just made on the Twitch, on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, twitch.tv/ESPN975 by Barry on Deck. What's up, Barry? About how sometimes transparency, like revealing what's underneath the kimono, it's not exactly the best thing for your organization. You're right. I mean, you might, when you reveal the kimono, what's underneath, you might be, packing a micro. You know what I'm saying? Or you might just have everything all over the place, right? I feel like the track record for things that Dana Brown has said this year has been rather all over the place. I don't think that means that they're a disorganized mess or anything like that. But, I mean, this is Dana Brown's first trade deadline, and I'm really curious as to what's going to happen. I know there's a couple of names that are being listed right here. E315 is mentioning Paul Goldschmidt. I know that there's some pitchers that have been mentioned. There is a possibility that Justin Verlander is going to get traded since the Mets are starting to strip parts. And I know somebody put out a rumor, and I don't know how much stock we put into it, that maybe there was some sort of agreement made between Verlander, who has a no-trade clause, and the Astros to come back. Again, these are all sorts of things that right now it's just speculation, and I'd rather react to what actually happens. But I'm very curious as to how Dana Brown is going to handle it and how much autonomy he actually has, whether it be from Jim Crane or, hell, be from Dusty Baker, because you hear him say, yeah, Jim Crane's letting me do my job. But then you hear Dana Brown say this about a manager who's really only under contract until the end of the season. Apparently, Dusty Baker has the final say on whatever they do at the trade deadline.
I mean, if we have to, we will. We won't do anything without talking with Dusty and knowing how that may impact his flexibility on the roster. You know, the 26 man. But, at the end of the day, it could happen. I don't want to say it can't happen, but it could. But nothing will be done without Dusty's input, because Dusty's running his team day to day, and he's been doing a good job doing it.
I guess that rules out a Martin Maldonado for Shohei Ohtani straight up trade. I guess that rules it out, because I feel like Dusty Baker would even say no to that. He loves Maldi. It's fine. There's some magic with Maldi. At least when I go to the ballpark, he always hits a home run and pulls off some voodoo magic where a guy who was clearly safe at home plate is out all of a sudden after replay, at least based off of the Rangers' very biased, very whiny broadcast. So I'm curious to see what happens this weekend. I doubt that the Astros will make a move by the start of the weekend, but 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well if you have thoughts on what the Astros should be doing at the deadline. I'm just curious to know if Dana Brown's going to be aggressive, if he has the power to be aggressive, whether free of Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell lurking over his shoulder, or Dusty Baker coming in last second and stopping a trade. Very curious. Weird spot for them to be in. Probably the best way to go about it, as I've said before, is to stand pat. These players can play better. Is it worth giving up a lot to get a guy for a short amount of time? I'm not really feeling it.
Yeah, I think definitely for the lineup, like, there really isn't that many spots you can actually replace someone with, you know, because you have your outfield with Yordan, who might DH also, but then you got Chaz, you got Tucker. Your infield is Abreu, who just signed a new deal, and you're not going to be able to get off of him, so he has to play. He has to just play better. You have Altuve, you have Jeremy Peña, who maybe he's part of a, like, mega trade. Like, if you were to trade for Ohtani, like, he would have to be in it.
Yes.
But then now you have a shortstop hole. And then you have Alex Bregman behind the dish, you have Maldi, and also Yonier Diaz. So there really isn't many spots in the lineup that could actually be fit. Maybe you can make a small, you know, move so we don't have to see Madris or Kessinger ever again.
Yes, please.
Maybe
no offense to those guys.
Yeah, move some furniture around in that way. But I could see them trading for an arm just to, at the very least, add some stability to this rotation if they can get even just a rental.
Little bright spot here. Verlander's no trade clause. If Verlander wants to go anywhere, it does stand to reason that this would be a place that he wants to go to. But again, I have no much. I do not know what the Mets would be willing to take in return for Verlander. It seems like they would want a lot, considering they just gave him this contract. And I know things have been going poorly, but I think to them, they probably believe, like, hey, we need a prospect in exchange for him, even if, because he's under contract for the next 2 years, even if it is an expensive contract.
So the MLB.com's Mark Feinstein.
Right. He's the guy that said that essentially this is a possibility that the Mets are thinking about trading Verlander.
And the two teams that he named, or the two, like, main suitors that he names, are the Astros. But he says the front runner would likely be the Rangers.
Wow.
And then he also throws in the Reds, which would be funny. But so Rangers, Astros are most likely. And this does feel like the Mets are like last night they officially put JV on the block. That's what it just seems like.
It does. He is Sean Mapes behind the glass. I am Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. There is one really ballsy thing that Dana Brown could do that would impress the hell out of me. I'll tell you what that is on the other side. And they're trying to distract us from the NHI. Really hard. I'll explain.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
Thank you, Spencer Tillman. The ballsy move that Dana Brown could make is this. And I don't know if there's an option that fits the bill here, but it would be to trade for a left-handed first baseman. He's been talking about getting a lefty bat. The ballsy move is to get another first baseman, because one of the more frustrating things, particularly from Wednesday's bloodbath of a game, is that the Astros had a couple of rallies going and Jose Abreu killed all the momentum in them. And I think Dusty Baker, who we did see not that long ago pull Jose Abreu for a couple of games, I don't think Dusty Baker is opposed entirely to the idea of pulling him. He's not like Jeff Bagwell saying, well, look at the back of the stat card. So that's the move. If you guys know of a person, let me know, right?
Cody Bellinger can play both outfield and first base and is left-handed.
Yeah, but I don't want that guy.
Okay.
here's the problem. Like, there is an element of pettiness that I feel like we all need to keep forever when it comes to the Astros and people that have spoken ill about them. The locker room has changed so much that I don't think it would be the issue that some believe it would. Should Cody Bellinger come here? Like, it's really just Altuve and Bregman at this point in time. But I don't know. I don't want it. The fan in me doesn't want it. Just like the fan in this texter on the text line from the 832, he's saying he's praying to the baseball gods Verlander doesn't waive his no-trade clause, as you said in the last segment, Sean, for a trade to the Rangers. Because that would be an FU. I think it would be a bit of an FU. And I would get it because I think there is an element of Verlander saying, like, whoa, really? Like, you're not going to offer me what I'm worth? Like, they clearly played hardball with Verlander. And I get it from Crane's perspective, from Bagwell's perspective. I also get being miffed if you're Verlander. You just had even if you sucked in the playoffs, you just had the best regular season of your career, arguably, last year.
If Verlander goes to the Texas Rangers, I feel like he would be one of the most disliked Houston athletes who, like, it was awesome and won a championship for Houston. And everyone, it feels like you mentioned, in last year's playoffs was, like, ready to, like, kind of throw dirt on him. And then if he goes and gets traded and waives a no-trade clause, just, like, implies or means that he wants to go there.
Yeah.
He basically chooses to go to the Rangers. I feel like the city of Houston would actually be against Justin Verlander in, like, a major way.
There is a mean girls element to Astros fans when it comes to players who have left. Because, look, Garrett Cole hat thing. Sean's laughing his ass off behind the glass.
That was just a very funny Garrett
I did not. That actually Garrett was unintentional. The Garrett Cole thing is all based on the hat.
It is.
It's all based on the hat. Nothing more than that. Because he was awesome with the Astros. He was. I do agree with a lot of people, though. Like, they basically saved his career, and he acted like a jackass the last moment that he was there. Garrett Cole, Carlos Correa, Verlander. Like, there's this weird element where these guys have left, and people are not as appreciative of those three, but George Springer and Charlie Morton, like, carte blanche. And understandable for those two. They were extremely likable. But there is an interesting element of, like, F those guys when they left. It's like they were part of the greatest run that this city probably will ever have in sports. Let's be honest. Like, this is never happening in another sport.
Yeah. Or if it is, like, you're in basketball, if you have this kind of run, you're the Chicago Bulls. Like, you're the 90s Bulls. If you have it in football, you're the Tom Brady Patriots. Basically, you need the greatest player of all time to play for your team, to go on this kind of run. Yeah. Baseball is the only one where, like, you actually don't need the greatest player of all time to
play
for
your team. That's true, but it helps to have a lot of great players.
Yeah, you have probably, like, three Hall of Famers or players that in your uniform played at a Hall of Fame caliber.
Todd the Show says JV would be dead to me if he went to the Rangers. Huh. All right.
I feel like that would be consensus. And yeah. I would understand.
Similarity for me growing up, Adam Vinatieri joining the Colts was a what the bleep move.
Yeah.
And the Patriots were not offering him any money. And, I mean, the guy had won them, like, multiple Super Bowls and kicked the maybe greatest kick in NFL history that kicked through the snow to send the game to overtime. It was like a 40-plus yard field goal, and it was intense blizzard. And I remember he signed with the Colts, and I was like, F you. So, like, I get it. Like, I get the mean girls element. I'm just now, like, as somebody who covers the sport now I can take a look at it from a more objective angle and see, like, yeah, I used to be an irrational, crazy person.
Now you're just a soulless journo, with your pen and your pad at the game, talking about the majesty of it.
I'm glad you're mentioning journos, because I am the one journalist in sports radio who has made you aware of non-human intelligence and how our government has been covering it up, at least based off of UFO testimonies that happened earlier in the week. And already, they're trying to distract us again. I think the New York Times was pretty late with the first story that they actually had about those hearings. But now, all of a sudden, this was the biggest story on the internet last night. Sam Bankman-Fried from FTX could be jailed after leaking intimate messages from his ex-girlfriend, Caroline Ellison, not the best-looking gal, no offense to her, to the New York Times. This was part of his like weird-seeming sex cult. And Caroline's had some takes about like how you need to have a sex hierarchy when you have multiple partners. And she's written these on Reddit. But she also apparently had a journal. And she was writing in her journal that like, yeah, I don't know if I can handle my job working with FTX. I guess the group was called the Almeida Group or something like that. And I guess it's illegal if you're Sam Bankman-Fried to leak somebody's diary in the New York Times. Prosecutors are arguing it violates his bail conditions. And that since he released this, that he's got to go straight to jail because he's been out of jail. How is he out of jail? A great question. The fact that this guy,
rich.
The guy, well, even then, the fact that a rich man was granted bail is suspicious. And I know that there are some people in the Twitch. So I know what the takes are going to be. I'm not even going to mention it on the air. All I'm saying is they're already trying to distract us from the NHI. And you could argue I've been doing that the last 2 days, talking about the Astros, talking about the Texans, right? Like, again, nothing matters anymore now that we know that there's non-human intelligence, allegedly, and that it's malevolent and that it's been effing with our nukes. Like, what really does matter anymore? But they're already trying to make us turn the page. Already. There's a politician who went on a thirst strike. They want us to get mad at this patsy politician who actually did it for legitimate reasons. He went on an 8-hour thirst strike to protest working conditions for people who don't get a lot of breaks. Actually, it makes sense. But they're making this guy a patsy. They want to distract us from the NHI. They want us to just completely forget. And since we're all kind of dumb and have ADD, we will.
Let's go to break. I'm getting a call. Let's go to break.
Getting a call. Okay, fine. Paul Galancho, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, we're 41 days away from the start of the NFL season. And we got to talk about Sean Payton doing what he should have done last year. Holy smokes. But first, let me tell you about my friends at the Circa Resort and Casino. Guys, Circa is a fantastic place to go in Las Vegas. If you've ever been there before, beautiful new casino with this giant stadium seating sports book inside with every single TV you can handle. And on top of that, a pool outside with the same kind of premise. But they've got something really cool going on. And you got to sign up by the start of the football season. They have two challenges. First, there is the Circa Million Challenge. You go out to the Circa Resort and Casino, you put down a grand, and over the course of the year, you get to pick 5 games against the spread a week. First place, $1 million. Last place, $100,000. That's a fun little wrinkle. On top of that, there's also the Circa Survivor Challenge. $8 million at stake with a $1,000 entry. And if you're the last one alive, picking teams just to win, straight up, guess what? $8 million. But you got to go to the Circa Resort and Casino to actually put your bet in. You can make all your picks from week to week right here in H-Town or wherever you're living. So go to the Circa Resort and Casino. Join these challenges if you want to make big, big bucks.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues on the Paul Gallant Show.
41 days away from the start of the NFL season, and we got to talk about one of the funniest stories in NFL history. Eugene Robinson, number 41, a 3-time Pro Bowl safety and Super Bowl champion safety. Eugene Robinson, leading up to Super Bowl 33, I believe it was the night before, at a breakfast the day before the Super Bowl, he received the BART Star Award from the religious group Athletes in Action, honoring athletes of high moral character. Later that night, Eugene Robinson was arrested for soliciting a prostitute. And he was beaten in the Super Bowl on an 80-yard touchdown pass from John Elway to Rod Smith. he didn't sleep the night before the game. I wonder why. You get arrested the night before the Super Bowl. What a great story in NFL history. Also great to hear Sean Payton, who was an absolute nothing burger as an NFL analyst for Fox last year. He just decided to go scorched earth on the previous Denver Broncos regime. He said this of the Nathaniel Hackett era in Denver, quote, "It might have been one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL. That's how bad it was. Everybody's got a little stink on their hands. There's 20 dirty hands for what was allowed, tolerated in the training rooms, the meeting rooms, the offense. I don't know, Hackett. A lot of people had dirt on their hands. It wasn't just Russell Wilson. He didn't just flip. He still has it. This BS that he hit a wall, shoot, they couldn't get a play in. They were 29th in the league in pre-snap penalties on both sides of the ball." Well, if you're familiar with Russell Wilson with the Seahawks, that was a problem with him in the Seattle Seahawks. I know, because I was there. Regular delay of games in Seahawks games with Russell Wilson under center. Anyway, continued Payton, "It doesn't happen often where an NFL team or organization gets embarrassed, and that happened here. Part of it was their own fault relative to spending so much bleeping time trying to win the offseason, the PR, the pomp and circumstance, marching people around and all this stuff. And Payton says that's not happening this year. We're doing the opposite." And then on top of that, Payton decided to go over the top and take a shot at the New York Jets, which I love. "We're not doing any of that. The Jets did that this year. You watch. Hard Knocks. All of it. I can see it coming." So basically, he's implying that he doesn't think that the Jets are going to reach their sky-high expectations. That led to former Bronco turned Jet. So this is like the one guy who this is like all sorts of shots at this specific player. Billy Turner, who posted on social media, "Seems like someone started training camp and is trying to soften the blow after realizing what he's in for this season. Bleeping bum," adding the hashtags childish and bounty gate after that post.
I love when like people just hashtag like what's on the hashtag childish, like what's going on there? Hashtag bounty gate, is it a whole bunch of stuff from 2011 or whenever that happened?
Right, because hashtags were at one point designed to just help your posts get found.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people actually look on social media at hashtags anymore. So maybe I think he was just trying to do like hashtag douchebag, hashtag I hate him, hashtag I hope he dies and he burns in hell.
It's like when LeBron does like hashtag I am just a sports fan regardless of the sport I play, just my thoughts as a sports
hashtag
fan.
Hashtag the kid from Akron.
Yeah. Hashtag strive for greatness.
Yeah, so I don't know what the point of hashtags is anymore.
I think it's just for the algorithm, right?
No, I think it's... I really do not know. I wish I had an answer.
Okay.
I will put a dumb hashtag in there from time to time as well. By the way, Robert Saleh also heard it. So the Jets really tuning out the outside noise with Hard Knocks right around the corner. Here is the head coach of the Jets.
"Well, I'm not going to acknowledge Sean on that. He's been in the league a while. He can say whatever the hell he wants. But as far as, you know, what we have going on here, it's, I kind of live by saying, if you ain't got no haters, you ain't popping. So hate away. You know, it's obviously we're doing something right if you got to talk about us when we don't play you till week four. And I'm good with it, you know. But, you know, the guys in our locker room, they've earned everything that's coming to them. And really excited about what's going on. I think Hackett's doing a phenomenal job here. The coaching staff is doing a phenomenal job. And we're focused on us. I get it. There's a lot of external noise. There's a lot of people who are hating on us. There's a lot of people looking for us to fail. There's a lot of crows pecking at our neck. But all you can do is spread your wings, keep flying high until those crows fall off and suffocate from the inability to breathe. It's a whole other analogy.
Wait,
I'll get into later. But
what? Okay, that took so many turns. I had not heard the audio yet. Okay, so the first part of Robert Saleh's response where he says, like,
if you ain't got no haters, you ain't popping.
Yes, Sean. I love it.
I've always lived by that.
I love how he said poppin'.
I love that he says it's like something he lives by. Like,
I gotta say, I kind of like Robert Saleh now that he made that crows reference. What the hell was that from? Can we play that part again? That is one of the all-time, like, what? Where did that come from? And I'm glad, Sean, that you said, like, wait for it, as that clip was playing, because there are a couple of cringeworthy things Salah said along the way, but I think he pulled up and avoided the nosedive with that.
Yeah, he did, like, revert into coach speak for a little while, but like, oh, we love Nate. He's doing a great job here, blah, 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 blah.
By the way,
and then
also,
he just circles back into weird analogy corner.
Before we play it again, Sean, also, Nathaniel Hackett is on the Jets coaching staff. Like, this is just an amazing story, but here's the last part of Robert Saleh's quote.
And we're focused on us. I get it. There's a lot of external noise. There's a lot of people who are hating on us. There's a lot of people looking for us to fail. There's a lot of crows pecking at our neck. But all you can do is spread your wings, keep flying high until those crows fall off and suffocate from the inability to breathe. It's a whole other analogy I'll get into later, but...
I wanted to get into it now!
Also, wait, so the crows are pecking at our neck.
Yes.
Then we have to spread our wings and fly high so the crows suffocate
also,
from the inability... Like, wait, are we a bird too? Are we a bigger bird than crows?
Well, they are a jet, so maybe... Maybe he was thinking, like, we're Transformers and that we have the ability to extend arms.
He's Starscream? Is that's what he is?
The best part is that is the correct Transformer to reference, because Starscream was the Decepticon who was a jet.
Yeah.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. This is Jake Asman's Lord and Savior. I cannot wait for this to all crash and burn. You see Jake furiously, you know, putting his hand in his pants to, like, some video trailer that was coming out of, I think, Sauce Gardner covering Garrett Wilson in practice. He's like, yeah, this is going to be great. You're right. This is going to be the high point of the season. And, yes, this is all I have. The Patriots no longer matter, so all I have is just to wait for the inevitable Jets disappointment. Everything's going so well. But the Jets care about the outside noise and always have more than anyone. Did you see this story about how Aaron Rodgers is unlikely to play in the preseason, but if he does, it'll be in the game against the New York Giants? Like, that is just classic Jets loserdom. What a loser organization. Imagine, like, wearing their, by the way, terrible-looking gear now, because they've decided, you know what? We had a cool look in the 80s. We had a cool look in the 60s and in the 90s. Let's just throw it away and have a logo that's a football when we're a effing plane. And just roll with that for here on out. Imagine wearing that stuff. You're just a loser. I mean, even the Confederates had more victories than the Jets. They won for 2 years. The Jets, once. Sean, you're looking down. I'm just saying.
I just didn't see them being compared to the Confederates.
Yeah, they are. They are. So there you go. Send that to Jake, please. I like telling Jake to get his shine box. Okay. Guys, Deebo Samuel is in the best shape of his life. And this is pretty funny. Kyle Shanahan telling us about Deebo Samuel, saying he's in the best shape he's been in since 2019.
Just seeing him yesterday for the first time. Never had a grown man send me so many pictures with his shirt off, but it looks good. And I can tell he's put the work in. So I know you guys heard him that day. That's the last time I really heard him. But I see better than I hear. And Deebo's in a really good spot. And I'm really excited for Deebo this year.
Are these selfies? You can't send another guy a shirtless selfie. Even I know that.
I imagine it's like a mirror selfie, right? Like at the gym.
Yeah, even that's weird.
No, man. It is weird. I'm just saying, I think in order for his coach to see his full physique, I think it has to be like, and probably like, you know, you want to do it after a pump, so you look even better.
Oh, yeah,
for,
that's true.
For
that's
Kyle,
true.
You have to impress Kyle Shanahan.
I have sent people like shirtless selfies after going to the gym, but they aren't my boss.
Yeah. Probably not.
It's a little weird. A little weird. But hey, it's 2023. Do you fly high until the crows pecking at your neck fall off?
And die because of
asphyxiation.
What are we talking about? Like, that's like the end of Iron Man 1. is basically that.
That's the clunkiest dialogue I've heard since George Lucas took a dump on the last 6 Star Wars movies. Although he wasn't a part of the last 3. Okay, Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. The only thing that can happen in training camp, bad things. Jalen Ramsey collided with Tyreek Hill. He's going to need meniscus surgery. And Joe Burrow was carted off with a calf strain, but I guess he's okay. While we're on some homoeroticism from Kyle Shanahan, or excuse me, from Debo Samuel, this is an interesting line from Ja'Marr Chase, who says, yeah, Joe Burrow, he's good because he gave me the eye.
Yeah, we just gave each other that look, and, you know, he's a strong guy. He said, okay, he's fine, and that was it. Next man up, you know, same thing we should say at LSU. We can't dwell on the situation. We just got to make sure next quarterback's ready for the situation.
Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just got that look in our eye, Sean, that we're going to talk a little Texans training camp next. What did we see at day two? What was actually a big deal? What doesn't matter at all? We'll discuss. Plus, the rest of the show, is Justin Verlander coming back to the Astros? Is he going to the Rangers? And the return of one of Houston's maybe best ever talkers to the sports world with an all-time, wow, this guy's a hard-o move.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Astros had last night off, so we've been talking about what they might do at the trade deadline. I'm very curious as to how much autonomy Dana Brown has, because while he's saying that he has autonomy from Jim Crane, hard to believe that, just given the way the offseason began. And on top of that, he also said that Dusty Baker has the final say with a lot of these moves. So got to wonder what they're going to do in the coming days before Tuesday's trade deadline. Also, a blast from the past happened last night, and let's just briefly talk about it, because I don't want to really give him any more publicity, because I could not stand him when he was here. I thought he was a liar. And he was. This is a guy who was at the University of Houston, acted like he would never leave the University of Houston, and then left the University of Houston, despite stopping all interviews that he had with the station I was working at the time, the Texans flagship, because they put up an article thinking about the places that Tom Herman could go to after the year. Tom Herman, he's still a coach. Honestly, I had no idea. I had to Google it because a tweet popped up in my timeline. Tom Herman on last year's FAU Owls. Quote, we had a 5-7 locker room, so we locked it. He locked the locker room for a few days so that they could earn the facilities back. Football coaches are going to football coach. Herman was such an insufferable hardo. Remember the P chart that he had at Texas? Now, in his defense, that one actually was smart. Your P should always be clear if you're a football player. Always. You should always be drinking water. Like, this is what me as a high school football legend learned playing in Florida. And everyone at our school hated the football team because we always had to pee. We would all be drinking like 1 20-ounce of water per class, and all of us would have to pee like once or twice a class. Not ideal. So that was good by Tom Herman. But for the most part, Tom Herman's tenure in the state of Texas was marked by moments of being a hard-o, lying, and other moments of the ilk. And now he's locking his players out of the locker room until they earn it back. Kugble says, same old bleep. He locked the locker rooms at UH. He'll be making out with his players in no time.
Tom Herman loves himself a gimmick. You said football coaches were going to football coach. Tom Herman almost takes it to a new next level of football coaching gimmicks.
Do you think UH would take him back, as Lone Ranger 614 says at twitch.tv/ESPN975?
I don't know. They should. You know, like, they should. You know, if this doesn't go well with Dana this year, probably should swallow their pride, but I don't think they will. I just don't think they will.
It's weird because
I don't think Tillman Fertitta will.
You're in the Big 12. I think you want to do the most that you can while the Big 12 is at full strength, right? Is this the second to last year or the last year for Texas and Oklahoma?
This is the last year.
Okay. Well, when they, you know what? Okay. If this was a two-year thing, yeah. Yeah, you probably wouldn't, but after this year, yeah. I mean, Holgorsen's definitely on the hot seat, and it's not like he's been terrible at UH, but I feel like UH has higher expectations for itself, and I think they should. I with the new facilities that they've brought in, and the fact that they're here, and now the fact that they're in a relevant conference, we'll see how long that conference remains relevant. Colorado's joining it, so that's neato. But, what? Well, I mean, look, they... Here's the thing, like with Deion Sanders, they're actually going to be high profile.
Yeah.
But it is just, it's really just like neat. Okay, Colorado's in the Big 12. That does not save the Big 12. It does not, it just makes the Pac 12 dead.
Yes, that is the most notable part is the Big 12 getting a school from the Pac 12. So that kind of solidifies their place pretty solidly at third in the new world order as far as like most kind of safe conferences.
Yeah. All right, guys. Houston Texans training camp day two. What was a big deal? What wasn't? Because again, you got to take everything with a grain of salt that you see out there. So I took a look at some of the reports that are coming out from guys like DJ Bien-Aimé, who I do a Talking Texans podcast with. Check out last night's episode on the ESPN YouTube channel. If you are a Texans diehard, we got into the real nitty gritty. Is this a big deal or no big deal? DeMeco Ryans was asked about the quarterback competition between C.J. Stroud and Davis Mills, who are splitting reps exactly down the middle. Here is what DeMeco had to say.
Yeah, the quarterbacks will rotate as we did in the spring. Nothing has changed there.
Do you anticipate, like, how long do you anticipate rotating?
We'll see. You know, we'll see. When the time comes for us to declare someone as a starter, we'll do that when it's the right time for us.
He said a little bit later, they'll have a starter by Baltimore. Great. That's good. Deal or no big deal? This is no big deal. Stroud's going to get the job. It's just a matter of weeks. Hopefully a week. I would like this to just be done already. I think one of the tricky things about this, where they are legitimately having C.J. Stroud do reps with the ones, then they're having Davis Mills do reps with the ones, I do think there's potential to disrupt the rhythm of both of these guys. With the way that they're doing it, I think it would make more sense to maybe rotate on a day-to-day basis. And DJ and I talked about that on the latest episode of the podcast. Again, we're nitpicking here. He's a first-year head coach. But it is kind of weird that they're essentially like one group drill, next group drill. They're just alternating between Stroud and Mills as the one, with Mills always getting the first reps between the two. The first reps.
Yeah, he leads the rotation. I wonder if... So the first preseason game is August 10th against the Patriots, I believe. Yeah, I think that's the first one. Do you think that there's a resolution? Do you think C.J. Stroud is the starting quarterback before or after that game?
You know what?
About 2 weeks from now.
I think, Sean, what they're going to do is they're not going to announce a starter until
the week before week one.
The week of the game.
Like Monday before the Baltimore game.
Honestly, if I'm DeMeco Ryans, there's no point in announcing the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Zero point. If you want to really prove how tight-lipped this ship is, and it has been, I think, extremely tight-lipped, as you saw leading up to the draft where no one knew what the hell the Texans were doing, the one little edge that you might have leading up to week one is, we're not going to tell you who our starting quarterback is going to be. You're just going to find out on Sunday. Does it actually provide that much of an advantage? Not really. And it's not like the film that the Ravens are going to see if Davis Mills is good, you know? But that's like the one advantage that you might have going into that game is just complete fog of war. And if I'm DeMeco Ryans, I think I would do that, even though it is sort of like with Tom Herman earlier in this segment, very gimmicky.
Yeah, but there is like, if you can get like a 1%, like 1% edge, like just anything to give you a little bit. Because, yeah, like you said, like at the end of the day, like
it's dumb.
The Ravens studying Davis Mills tape and then being like, oh my God, it's C.J. Stroud making his first career start, probably and still throwing to Nico Collins and all the guys he's going to be, Robert Woods. I do think that the Ravens, like at the end of the day, can probably still just like outdo the Texans. Like just they're just the players they have are just better, and like they just match up well against the Texans. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. But like you said, I think it's annoying. But like you said, like if it can get you one little bit of an edge, might as well do it.
Let's continue. Deal or no big deal, Texans. Day two of training camp observations. We'll talk about what's going on today a little bit later. Kenyon Green, who's working back from offseason knee surgery, was first in rotation at left guard in team drills yesterday. That is a huge deal. I have been terrified, yes, terrified, that once again, Green would be behind the eight ball going into the year because he had availability issues last offseason. And while he did have some glimpses of promise in his rookie season for the most part, it was a disappointment. He was a first-round pick last year, and he was a disappointment. Stingley, I feel like you can make an argument that Lovie Smith's scheme really effed him up. But Kenyon Green, I think he was behind the eight ball from the beginning. You need all the reps you can get, especially with the way that the offseason's changed. If you're an offensive lineman, it kind of sucks for you in the offseason. How much better can you truly get, especially this time of year where it's not even full pads? Green's got to be out there. So I think it is a huge deal that Green is actually out there at practice.
Yeah, just a health-wise, that he can be out there in practice, like you said, with the off-season surgery. And a guy, you know, you kind of worry about that kind of stuff. And then, like you said, just getting the reps, that's helpful, especially for a guy, you said, like, kind of, like, Derek Stingley probably got an incomplete on last year's if you're grading the rookies.
Right.
Green got his chances, and he did not do well.
Very many chances. The guy lined up across from Derek Stingley, Steven Nelson, the man who called Nick Caserio a clown freak for his vest love, had the first interception of training camp yesterday off of Davis Mills.
Big deal.
I mean, I want it to be a big deal because I want C.J. Stroud to be the starter right away.
And I want Steven Nelson to get paid.
You want the? Are you team Steven Nelson?
I mean, anytime you call your GM a clown freak, I'm going to be on your side.
I'm team Steven Nelson as well. I hope, like, there is a chance he's a surprise cut, I think, because there's a lot of corners. Yeah. But he's working with the first unit, and if he's the first guy to get an interception, that definitely bodes well for him. He did play well last year. I think that the problem for him is potentially that it's just a more crowded cornerback room. And Shaquille Griffin, who they signed and I've seen play in Seattle, is very familiar with the scheme that we believe DeMeco Ryans is going to run.
Yeah, I'm not here saying I think that he's going to be Champ Bailey or something. Like right. I like him. I like having that kind of character on the team. That's really all it is.
Big deal or no big deal? So we said, I'm going to say no big deal that he got that interception, but I want it to be a big deal. Yeah. Big deal or no big deal? Jonathan Joseph is on the Texans coaching staff as part of the Bill Walsh Diversity Coaching and Nunn Wooten Scouting Fellowships. It rolls off the tongue. That's a big deal. You got Derek Stingley Jr. on the team. You want him to get good? How about the best corner in franchise history?
Yep.
Boom. So there you go, guys. That's our day two of training camp Houston Texans observations. Paul Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, we're going to take a look ahead at the schedule for the Astros. It gets very difficult. Does that mean that the Rangers are going to be able to make some make up some ground that they were not able to the last couple of weeks? I'll give you the answer to that next. Plus, is Verlander going to end up on the Rangers? Or is he coming back to the Astros? Sounds like both are possible. Paul Gallant, stick around.